We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Want to put your baseball skills to the test? Then get ready to show your stuff with MLB Pitch, Hit, and Run. The official youth skills competition of Major League Baseball. Sign up for free for a chance to play your way to the Pitch, Hit, and Run finals at the 2024 World Series. Visit pitchhitrun.com today.
Sports Radio, 92.9 The Game. It is John Schreckman Show, back at it on a Thursday evening with you. 404-741-741. 0929. That is the Solomon Brothers Diamond text line. Feel free to leave us a comment there. Don't forget the station is at 929 The Game on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter. Follow myself at JMCH316. He's at Jarvis390. Radio.com app, of course, is the way to always listen to the radio station when you're not in your vehicle. That's the cool new way to do it. Download that on your device today. Sports Radio 929 The Game, too, is helping you stay connected with past shows, interviews, and all the content that you need. For more info, go to radio.com/stay connected. I was telling Jarvis in the break, and I'm going to speak for myself. And honestly, I do a lot of things because it's what I'm interested in. I enjoyed that very much with Darren Rovell. I'm not really much of a card collector anymore. I've got some stuff. I was telling Jarvis, I got a really cool, like, number to 75 Ronald Acuna Jr. red autograph Topps minor league card that's worth a few bucks. And, you know, I've got a Willie Mays on card autograph and things like that. I mean, I've got some fun stuff that's out there. I'm not nearly as heavy in it as what I was, you know, even maybe, I don't know, 5 or 6 years ago. But I've got some fun, cool stuff. And I always look, I've done a lot of, you know, selling and buying on eBay and stuff over the years and things like that. And it's amazing, I mean, what some of that stuff is worth. People kind of knock it and things like that, but you heard them. I mean, you know, some of those Mike Trout rookie cards that are autographed, they're worth a freaking fortune. And because they're limited number, they're serial number to X amount of card. Like I said, the Ronald Acuna one that I have, it's a Ronald Acuna. It's like a throwback card with the 1968 design, minor league issue. It is Topps, though. It's a Topps, you know, issued card. That was part of a set that they released. They released a minor league set, minor league heritage, I think they call it, or something like that. It's an on-card autograph in red, like numbered to 75, something like that. I mean, it's a really cool-looking card. But, you know, stuff like that, it's worth a few bucks. I mean, you know, you spend like $100 on a box, you know, of that have packs in them, and you open them up and stuff like that, and you find out what the quote-unquote hits are and things like that. And, you know, you get one card like that. I remember one time I bought a box. Oh, Jarvis, I bought a box of, I can't remember what, oh, it's, I think it was called Allen and Ginter, that was made by Topps. It was like a $100, $125 box of cards, and there was this card on top. When you opened up the plastic and you open up the box, it had what they called like a box topper. There's a card right inside sitting on top of the packs. Well, I hit what was this, like, it's like an, I don't know, it's like a oversized postcard of a piece of Cliff Lee's jersey. It's got the back that says Lee when he was with the Philadelphia Phillies. And I sold the thing on eBay for $650. So, I mean, look, I mean, you spend $100 on a box and you hit the right card, you know, you can maybe turn a few bucks out of all of it. I actually hit one time in a retail pack at Walmart. I hit a it was Allen and Ginter as well. I hit, ready for this, Jarvis? I hit a George Bush autographed card. The president, George Bush, George W. Bush, he had an autographed card a few years ago. So did Manny Pacquiao and some other guys. He had an autographed card. I spent like, I think it was like, they were like, it was like a retail rack pack that was like $10, and I sold that card for $600. on eBay. And I've actually got a Kevin Costner autographed card of like him in Bull Durham. I actually have an on-card autographed Kevin Costner card from, I don't know, about 4 or 5 years ago as well. So, I mean, I've got a few neat little things out there that I have, you know, that probably are worth a few bucks. And I don't know, maybe one day I'll sell them or give them to my daughter and she'll probably throw them in the trash and lose all the money out of it like, you know, a lot of our parents did and stuff like that. But anyway, but that was a lot of fun. Fascinating to see what is going on out there in kind of the trading card world. What is not fascinating, though, is the idea of college football not playing this particular year. Now, we've been all over this story. And Kirk Herbstreit is a guy that I think, honestly, you know, I'm not the biggest fan of Kirk like a lot of y'all are. I get that. I get why you like him and all that. I just think he's kind of dopey, and I don't think he's a great broadcaster and all that. He's fine. He knows his stuff. I mean, he's not ignorant. He does know his stuff. But he's another one of those guys that throws out dopey hot takes. And maybe a few things dopier than no college, no pro football season happening. I mean, if he ends up being right, then he should run for president, okay? If he's got that kind of foresight, you know, into everything. But it's becoming more and more clear, as we've been talking about here, that it's getting to where, honestly, that college football has to play, if for nothing else, then they can't afford the economic loss. And I've been saying this, and people have wanted to argue with me about it. So our buddy Mark Schlabaugh, of course, he covered, you know, he's college football writer for ESPN, used to cover the Bulldogs for the AJC. Mark's a really insightful guy. He's a lot of fun always to talk to. And we used to always have fun when me and Randy were together and talk to Mark, because Mark obviously covered Randy when he was at Georgia. But along with a guy by the name of Patrick Reisch, and I've had him on shows that I've done before. He used to be with Forbes as a business writer, and I think he does some, he still may do some stuff with him, but he's very insightful about the business end of football. They've put out this article talking about how college football would be looking at a $4 billion loss if the season were to be canceled. Okay. Now, what's interesting is today marks the 100 days to college football. So we are 100 days from today that the college football season is supposed to start. And we've talked about how there have been, albeit smaller schools and things like that, but Cincinnati has cut their men's soccer program. The place I went to college, Akron U, they've eliminated their men's cross-country team, their men's golf team, and their women's tennis team. Bowling Green has cut sports programs. Central Michigan has cut some of their sports programs. And more universities are going to end up looking like this, that things are going to have to be cut. And they talk about the fact that if for no other reason, football doesn't have a choice within college athletics. They have to, just from a financial survivability point. They say that of that $4 billion that would be lost by not having college football, this is fascinating, $1.2 billion of that will come from lost ticket revenue. They say that each Power 5 school will see an average of $62 million in lost football revenue, and at least $18.6 million of that will come from ticket sales. Now, this is really a fascinating stat, because we've talked about this, that there's not huge, huge coffers that are out there to support collegiate athletics without continuing to pump the money in. They say about half of the public Power 5 athletic departments were self-sustaining in 2017-2018. Okay, what that means is the revenue that they generated covered all of the expenses without any funding from student fees or university support. So you understand that? That the athletic department of school X in the Power 5 can just sustain itself on its revenue it brings in without help from the school, help, you know, anywhere. They can do it, you know, on their own with no university support, no, you know, tuition money, nothing like that, okay? They say take away, just take away football ticket revenue by itself. Just football ticket revenue. Take that away. So where you had over half the Power 5 schools that were self-sustaining, okay? Just football ticket revenue alone, if you take that away, only two schools would still be able to be self-sustaining. One is Texas A&M. One is Georgia, believe it or not. Texas A&M and Georgia, this coming from Syracuse University's study, would be the only two schools, if you took away their football, just ticket sales revenue, that could self-sustain without having to start getting help from, you know, outside sources. And it turns out that in studies that have been done by Lead One Association, fewer than half of all FBS athletic departments have financial reserves that they could use during this type of crisis. In talking to ADs at 130 FBS schools, and by the way, Lead One Association, they represent athletic directors at 130 FBS schools, only 41% of ADs confirmed that there would be any sort of reserve available to be able to get through something like this. They say that analysis shows that Power 5 schools would collectively lose $303 million in revenue on game day spending by fans. That's not even ticket. That's not even counting tickets. That's talking about food, beverage, merchandise, parking. Not tickets, just the ancillary things. $303 million for the Power 5 schools averages out to $4.7 million per school. They say that collectively on game day across football, $1.5 billion would be lost, somewhere in the $23.3 million per school of all losses. Gene Smith, who was talking the other day, the athletic director for Ohio State, he had commented about the fact that, hey, depending on how things open up, we may have 15,000 or we may have 10 or 15,000 people in our stands. We may have 40,000 people in our stands. Part of it will be how they're opening. Now, there was an interesting story talking about how there's going to end up, they're expecting to have some very uncomfortable conversations with students and ticket holders in a lot of these places because seating is going to be so limited. And who are the haves and have-nots, and who gets the chance to sit at the table? And they were talking about how there's a good chance students won't get it, won't be a part of it, because with all due respect, they don't spend money. And even people that are season ticket holders, depending on what level they're at, may not be part of this as well, depending on what happens. Gene Smith says, quote, football's the elephant in the room. From that point of view, it's significant in funding all of our sports and everything we do for our student athletes. It's also important to our community in a number of ways. Every contest has significant impact in Central Ohio. And he's right. There's no question about it. 84.6% of Power 5 schools get their largest share of funding between, you know, their postseason football, their media rights for it, NCAA funding as well. Only about 11.5% comes from donor contributions, and 3.8% comes from ticket sales. So it's TV, it's bowl games, it's the NCAA tournament, you know, the Big Ten network, the SEC network. It's what drives everything. It's the thing that drives all of it. So if for no other reason, football is going to happen because, as I keep telling y'all, economically, they can't survive. They just can't survive without football. And schools are already cutting their athletic programs for it. And if they don't play football, you'll see a lot more, a lot more. Football and baseball and basketball won't go away, but tennis, soccer, track and field, you'll see a lot of programs that will start to make cuts from there. All right, when we get back, Gary Wyszynski is going to join us. He is the lead NHL writer for ESPN, ESPN.com, as the NHL has put out a new proposal in how they plan to operate their season. We will talk to him next. It is the John Chukwa Show, live with you on a Thursday evening, Sports Radio 929 The Game and on the Radio.com app. Sports Radio 929 The Game, back at it on the John Chukwa Show, hanging out with you on this Thursday evening, 404-741-0929. That's our Solomon Brothers Diamond text line if you want to leave us a comment there. Radio.com app, don't forget to download that because that's how you listen to us when you're not in your vehicle. We know you're not spending as much time there, so make sure you download the Radio.com app to catch us anywhere on the go. Social media, stations at 929 The Game. Follow myself. You can reach me at JMCH316. He's at JarvisD90. Well, we have some sort of proposal, we think, from the NHL, waiting to see what their next step is going to be. Here to help us break all of that down, we head out to the waitfor.com hotline. Greg Wyshynski is joining us, senior NHL writer for ESPN, host of the Puck Soup podcast. Follow him on Twitter at Wyshynski, W-Y-S-H-Y-N-S-K-I. Greg, really appreciate the time, man. Thanks for joining me this evening.
Hey, my pleasure, man. Thanks for having me.
So we've obviously seen, you know, a lot of stories now coming out about the NBA and what they're looking at doing, and Major League Baseball has obviously put their proposal out and their negotiations with the players, you know, on revenue and things like that. But it seems like the NHL has kind of, I don't know, for lack of a better term, lagged behind everybody else. Why has the NHL been maybe as slow or maybe slower than some of the other bigger sports leagues about what their next step is going to be?
Well, I think part of it is it's twofold. One, they are negotiating with the Players Association and trying to figure out exactly what sort of format they'll come back to. And over the last month, they've been trading different proposals about playoff formats, about return to play, should they finish the regular season, should they jump right to the playoffs, that kind of thing. It seems like we've gotten to a point where they're settling on a 24-team postseason, where you'd have play-in series and eventually get to that 16-team Stanley Cup playoff that they have every year. But the other facet of it is trying to figure out the hows and wheres and whys they're coming back. The league has been working for the last 2 months on trying to figure out different arenas across North America that they might be able to use as hubs where they could house the players and play the games inside of empty buildings. Complicating things, and this might answer your question as to why hockey lags behind other sports, they got a bunch of teams in Canada. Right now, Canada's got a thing where if you are visiting Canada, you got to be in quarantine for 2 weeks. So the whole thing is very complicated. On top of that, obviously, a bunch of players that are living overseas. You got guys skating all over Sweden still. So there's a lot of moving parts to hockey that may not necessarily impact baseball the same way.
You know, it's funny you say that because that was exactly where I was going to head to next, Greg, you know, is about the fact that the international aspect of it. Would there be any consideration, as crazy as this may sound, I know it's not an equal distribution per se, but trying to keep Canadian teams together and keep American city franchises together to try to eliminate, you know, as much travel back and forth from the countries as possible?
It would make some sense, and their one of their original plans was at the very least to kind of geographically make these places centralized as far as returning to play. But, you know, the thing they're looking at now is just to group 12 teams in one place and 12 teams in another, and that way you kind of decrease any need for travel. You just play all the games there. You start them at noon. You play them throughout the day, and you just get it done. One place that we know they're looking at, mainly because it seems like the NBA kind of moved on from it, is Las Vegas, which obviously has the capacity, hotel-wise, for the teams, for the staff, for the players' families in some cases. The expectation is that as they sort of move away from looking at four places and kind of focusing on maybe two sites to restart the season, that Vegas could be one of those.
Greg Wyshynski joining us here on the waitfor.com hotline, senior NHL writer for ESPN, as we take a look at some of the NHL proposals that are coming about to try to resume the season. Is it safe to say that, and I don't know, we kind of had some fun with Gary Bettman about the fact that he was really hanging on to this idea of still trying to play regular season and finish out the regular season. Is the idea of regular season, can we put that to bed? This will be really just a tournament to get to the playoff format that they would be doing at this point?
Yeah, you could find the teddy bear and the blanket and put that thing to bed because they ain't finishing the regular season. It's going to be 24 teams. The other seven teams pretty much know at this point that they're not going to come back to play, which is the right decision. I mean, look, we're in a global pandemic. We've got to worry about the health and safety of players. You're telling somebody from the Detroit Red Wings, one of the worst teams in hockey in the last 20 years, to come back and play out the string, just so other teams can have a certain number of games on their ledger is nonsensical. There's no way these guys should have to come back. The one thing that they are doing that's interesting, though, is, as I mentioned before, the plan is to have these play-in series, right? So the top four teams in each conference, they'd get a bye of some sort. The rest of the teams would play each other. And a lot of this has to do with money. It's kind of a nuanced thing. There are local broadcast rights, local sponsorship deals, that they still want to try to salvage by playing a certain number of games so the teams can meet their obligations on those contracts. The theory is they're not going to consider, by the letter of the law, these play-in series as part of the playoffs. They're going to consider it a postseason, but not part of the playoffs. And there's a theory that that's their way around trying to kind of play regular season games that aren't really regular season games and help these teams try to hit their numbers that they have to hit to satisfy the local rights holders and sponsors. It's a very nuanced thing, but as you know, in pro sports, it eventually all gets back to money.
Greg, listen, we're bitter down here. We've lost not one but two NHL franchises, and so we have a little bit of fun at the expense of the NHL. And what I mean by that is, you know, I've joked about, you know, the reports that have come out over the years about how SpongeBob SquarePants reruns have outdrawn hockey playoff games and things like that. How much of a concern does the NHL, I mean, look, we have a massively crowded American sports scene. You know, NASCAR's overloading on races. Golf is about to come back. You're going to get baseball back eventually. The NBA wants its slice of the pie. Oh, yeah. Don't look now, but the NFL is going to crank back up. I mean, what is, you know, how does Gary Bettman and the NHL look at what's their place in kind of the sports? I mean, hell, we got the Kentucky Derby that's going to be on Labor Day. I mean, what does the NHL look at as their place in all of the sports that are kind of jamming themselves back together in a short amount of time?
It's a great question. And first off, I should say, I think it's an absolute joke that the Winnipeg Jets try to erase their heritage in Atlanta and pretend that the other Winnipeg team that left for Phoenix is part of their legacy. It's a joke.
Yeah, screw them. How about this? Screw them, Greg.
I completely agree. Can't erase your history. It's funny. There actually was some positive news for the NHL when it comes to the crowded sports marketplace. As you know, their rights holder in the United States is NBC. As you know, NBC also is the rights holder for the Summer Olympics. Once the Olympics postponed, it opened up a huge window for the NHL to actually get their games on NBC in late July and early August. That was going to be a real tough gig for them, knowing that there probably wouldn't have been any room on those networks for hockey. Once the Olympics moved, it helped them out. But to answer your question, look, it's hockey. They've got demographic challenges. They've got geographic challenges. I think in the last decade and 15 years, maybe since the canceled season, they've made some really great inroads in trying to grow the sport and bring new people to it and also change the way the fan bases look. And I think that they've made a lot of progress there. And the numbers in some cases have been very good. But they know when they come back, you know, the focus is going to be on baseball and the NBA in some cases. So the hope that they have is, you know, we're going to try to bring back these teams in a very inventive way by going to 24 teams. They bring in places like the New York Rangers, like the Chicago Blackhawks, markets that otherwise wouldn't have been in the playoffs, to try to get those places excited about the return of hockey. So they're trying a little bit of gimmickry with the way they're bringing these teams back to hopefully create some excitement. But ultimately, man, it's the same problem that they have every year, which is they hand the Stanley Cup out in the middle of June, and now they're going to be playing hockey in the middle of August. And people's minds are not on ice in the middle of August unless it's in their drinks.
Greg, what about how it affects going into next season. I mean, obviously, you know, is the NHL hoping that they will start, you know, the 2020-2021 season on time, or is there a possibility that they may have to move the start of, you know, this next upcoming season back a little bit to just at least give some breathing room between the end and the beginning?
Yep, that is the plan. I mean, no matter what happens with this season, no matter when they started, and again, plans seem to be to get back to some sort of training camps in June, hopefully get this thing started at some point in July. They're going to definitely move the start of next season. They have to have enough room for a bit of an off season, you know, to get the work that needs to be done, the draft, trades, free agent signings, that kind of thing. Speculation has been that they will move the start of next season to December. Speculation is they will get rid of the All-Star game. They'll get rid of the bye week. They think that they can play an 82-game season beginning in December and ending sometime in late June. They've mapped it out. They think they've got it. The two most important things in this situation are, one, that they play 82 games. They've been adamant about not shaving games off of next season. And then, two, that they hopefully can bring fans back. Because remember, out of all the major sports, hockey is the one that is the most reliant on gate revenue. So their thought is, if we wait until December, maybe conditions change, maybe people feel more comfortable coming back to sporting events after they've gone to baseball games and gone to football games, and they can start bringing fans back to the arena in some capacity and start making money off of those tickets again. That is the big thing for them. Nothing that they do this summer is going to negatively impact their ability to get a full season in next year.
All right, Greg, last thing for you. I've only got about a minute left, so I guess tomorrow you're dropping your conversation with the showstopper, Mr. WrestleMania, Shawn Michaels himself. So how did that, as a massive wrestling fan, and we had Jim Ross on earlier this week, how'd that all go with Shawn Michaels?
It was awesome, man. Like, we've been doing a lot of work on ESPN around the Undertaker documentary series on WWE mm-hmm. Network, and I got a chance to talk to Taker, I've talked to Triple H, and now it's Shawn Michaels on his historic WrestleMania matches against The Undertaker, and then also a bit of the Hell in the Cell. My favorite part, we're talking about Hell in a Cell, they're about to go out in, what was it, 97 or whatever it was for this match.
Yes.
And they're told
October
by the guy running the curtain.
Yes.
Yeah, they're told by the guy running the curtain. They're like, how much time do we have? And he's like, you have 55 minutes. And now they're thinking they're going to go 30. So Shawn goes to The Undertaker. He's like, what are we going to do? And The Undertaker goes, I'll walk slowly.
and you know what's funny?
Anecdotes like that, man. It's good stuff. I hope you check it out tomorrow.
And you know what's funny is that was the first Hell in a Cell match. That's a 5-star rated match. That's the debut of Kane in that match. And what's one of the things famous about it is people talk about how methodical The Undertaker was in stalking Shawn Michaels inside that cage because he had nowhere to go. And it's funny to hear an anecdote like that because our perception is, look at how The Undertaker's stalking him. Now you know why out there. So
yeah.
Follow him on Twitter. He is at Wyszynski. Greg Wyszynski is the lead senior NHL writer for ESPN and host of the Puck Soup podcast. Join us here on the WadeFord.com hotline. Greg, really appreciate the time, buddy. Thanks for coming on in Atlanta and spending a few minutes with us. And be safe and enjoy, and look forward to talking to you again.
Much appreciated. Thanks for having me.
You got it. John Chukwi here. When we get back, it will be time for What's Bugging Chukwi. I guess Isaiah is the only guy who doesn't know. I'll explain it next. We'll hear it in his words. The John Chukwi Show on Sports Radio 929 The Game and on the Radio.com app. Sports Radio 929 The Game. Welcome back into the John Chukwi Show. Hanging out with you here on a Thursday evening, 404-741-0929. That's our Solomon Brothers Diamond text line to be a part of the show. Follow us on social media at 929 The Game. I'm at JMCH316. He's at Jarvis D90. Don't forget your radio.com app is the way you listen to the radio station when you're not in your vehicle. We know you're not spending as much time there, so be sure to download the radio.com app. Put that on one of your devices, like you got your iPhone or your Alexa or your Game Boy or Commodore 64, or Texas Instruments calculator, I don't know, Casio watch, I don't know, whatever you got for a device. Just download it to all of that to be able to listen to us. So lots of good stuff so far. Been a lot of fun thus far. So obviously we'll head into another ending of the week. And nice that it's going to be a long weekend. I think all of us can just use some downtime. I'm trying to figure out where we're going to go. We're going somewhere. I'm looking at Savannah. I'm looking at Charleston. I'm looking at Chattanooga. I'm looking at Greenville. We're going somewhere. I really like to go to the beach. I'm just was hoping I could maybe just get the hotel price to just drop just a little bit more. You know, I'm a Priceline VIP member. You know, so I get some extra discounts and stuff like that they give me, a couple other things. I'm just trying to sneak it down just a little bit lower. I can do it, but I'd like to just drop it down a little bit more. But I'd like to get to the beach. I mean, I was looking, Savannah's going to be thunderstorms in the evening over Memorial Day weekend, but like 90 and sunny during the day, man. I'm ready to soak up some rays and get to the beach. Because remember, rule number one, as Arn Anderson would always say, tan looks better. Fat looks better when it's tan. Always remember that. Fat looks better when it's tan. So get some sun, soak up some rays. But hopefully everybody is going to have a nice, long, enjoyable weekend. Certainly remember what the holiday is all about and the sacrifice that many have made for our freedom and independence. You know, certainly crazy times that we live in. But hopefully, you know, we were talking last night. We were on air as the NASCAR race was finishing up. I think they had their Xfinity race today. Of course, they're, you know, in Charlotte this weekend for all the events, the Coca-Cola 600, which is always a huge event, Memorial Day weekend. Not quite Daytona, but, I mean, I don't know. Is it maybe the second biggest race that NASCAR does during the season? I mean, it's a pretty big spectacle. And, of course, with Memorial Day weekend, you know, you'd always have the Indy 500 and, you know, the Charlotte race. And Charlotte, it's a neat little area out there in Charlotte. I've been to that track before. I've been out there, and Charlotte's so nice. And it's, you know, when I was out there for that race, it still was very country, you know, out there. It was the racetrack and not a whole lot that was all around there. But, you know, so things slowly creeping back, you know, in. I saw Mike Connie put some pictures out on his Twitter feed about Atlanta United. Just, you know, they had like some pool photos or stock photos of the guys doing workouts and stuff like that, you know, individual stuff and things like that. So hopefully we're getting closer and closer and closer. And, you know, the NBA is now starting to leak information, like we said at the beginning of the show, Orlando, you know, potentially Vegas. But, you know, 3 weeks of training camp and get into the playoffs and, you know, get going. And we just talked to Greg Wyshynski about the NHL and what they're doing. So, you know, through the summertime, I mean, you know, through mid-late summer, I mean, it's going to be busy. And as we head toward fall and, you know, a lot of stuff that's going to be crammed in a short amount of time between now and when football season will start back up. So lots of good things coming. Hope everybody's getting ready for a nice long weekend. Don't forget, I will not be on air with you Monday. We'll have, I forget, who's on air Monday, Jarvis? Who's filling in for us on Monday? I can't. Oh, that's right. Yes, that's right. I did see you and who's with you? Is it Willie? Oh, it's you and Sam. Why was I thinking it was Willie P that was on with you? But it's you and Sam on Monday night. Wow, how about that? So Jarvis will be on air Monday night. I did see your name, and I was thinking, I wasn't thinking it was Sam. I thought it was like Willie or somebody that was on. So yeah, Jarvis and Sam Crenshaw. How about that? There'll be a lot of bass, you know, on that show. So that will be coming up Monday from 7-11, and then we'll be back at it on Tuesday night, same time, same bat channel. All right, speaking of getting back at it, let's get into What's Bugging Chuckery. Or not. I mean, you know, we don't have to have an intro, I guess.
Don't look now, but somebody out there just got Chuckery ticked off. Like, that's hard.
Don't make me angry. You wouldn't like me when I'm angry.
It's time for What's Buggin' Chuckery on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
Still continuing to get lots of fallout from the last dance as things have wrapped up and people still putting out their top fives. And I was reading through the transcript of the YouTube interviews. Jarvis, did you get that email about the YouTube roundtable with Bill Cartwright, Craig Hodges, and Horace Grant. Yeah, and Ron Harper. Did you see that? That was funny stuff. I mean, I was reading through all the transcripts. So, fallout continuing, okay? So, the most recent is the Speak for Yourself show, which I guess, I want to make sure I got this right. It's Marcellus Wiley and it's Jason Whitlock, right? That's who does the Speak for Yourself. Who is it? Oh, okay. Jarvis said Jason Bumblock. Okay. All right. So, anyway. Jason Whitlock, Marcellus Wiley, they do this Speak for Yourself show. I think that's a Fox thing that they do. So they had Isaiah Thomas on, okay? And obviously, Mike continuing the story about not liking Isaiah and this, that, and the other. So they asked Isaiah Thomas, you know, hey, Michael has said all these things about you. Isaiah, what do you think about Michael?
I was shocked to hear that from him because he and his producer, they actually approached me to sit down and do the interview for The Last Dance. And, you know, we went back and forth in terms of timing and place and finally settled on doing the interview. And, you know, I got from his producer that they wanted me to be involved, and I chose to be involved. And I didn't know that this is what was coming because, you know, he and I have been to dinner before. He, Ahmad Rashad, and I have been to dinner before. We've seen each other in different places at NBA functions, and I never got any type of animosity or bad feelings from him towards me. So I don't have any bad feelings towards Michael Jordan, or have I ever had any bad feelings towards Michael Jordan. So I'm like me and my family who sat down to watch The Last Dance. We were pretty surprised to hear those words come out of his mouth, especially since it was following, an apology that I had given to him on national television.
Okay, I have first question that I have. Did everybody in sports get together a couple of months ago on a conference call and say, how can we rib Chuckery over the next couple of months? Because I'm hearing the most ridiculous things I've ever heard in my entire life. Between Isaiah and Michael and Strawberry and Paul Pierce and this and that, everybody in... I don't know, maybe being in quarantine, maybe the lead in the paint or the asbestos in the drywall or whatever is seeping into people's brains. Because Isaiah Thomas is literally the only guy left on earth who doesn't know that Michael doesn't like him. I've known this for 30 years. And I've never run into Michael Jordan. I've never run into Isaiah Thomas. I've never bumped into him in an elevator, seen him at a bar, shook their hand, been to an autograph signing, put a microphone in front of him, been in a locker room with him, anything. And I know Michael doesn't like Isaiah. And I know Michael's why Isaiah wasn't on the Olympic team. And this is a revelation to Isaiah? Did everybody in sports get together on a conference call and say, how can we rib Chuckery? It has to be. There has to be a concerted effort to have all the crazy stuff we've been covering on this segment the last couple of months with what people are saying. By the way, I started thinking about it too. Michael buried everybody in that document. Outside of Michael and Phil, everybody got buried. Scotty buried. Isaiah buried. B.J. Armstrong buried. Horace Grant buried. The last thing we see with Larry Bird is F.U. Biatch. Patrick, Peyton, Malone, Barkley. Buried, 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 buried. Like it's the Undertaker in Austin from 98. In a dump the dirt on him casket match. What fantasy world is Isaiah Thomas living in? I'm telling you honestly, it doesn't matter what Michael tells you. in front of the camera, he's going to put this out. How does Isaiah not know this? This has to be a joke. This has to be those two guys getting together and saying, let's screw with America. Let's really screw with America and their psyche and put out all these different things. Because there literally can't be a human being that was of any age of about, I don't know, 11 years old or more that didn't know that Michael and Isaiah have had angst for 30 years. Michael's not liked them, didn't like the Pistons, kept them off the Olympic team, everything. Never wanted to get back together with it, nothing. And Isaiah sat down with the family and was shocked. Somebody checked the radiation levels in Isaiah's home when the TV is on. Because there has to be some kind of brain-emitting device coming through his TV to make him think that way. Or he's the greatest showman in basketball. It's got to be one or the other. Because he can't honestly believe that he and Michael are like buddy and friends and they've put everything aside. And I tell you, you didn't need a documentary to have Michael confirm that he didn't want Isaiah on the Olympic team. What did I keep saying? If you lived it, you know it. You don't have to be an NBA insider like Ahmad Rashad to know the angst that those two guys had, and especially with Michael. And Michael buried everybody in that documentary. I was thinking about that. I was like, good Lord, outside of him and Phil, Doug Collins buried him. Stan Albeck buried him. Orlando Woolridge and all his teammates, Bradsa, buried him. Everybody. He buried everybody. He took a bucket dozer and dumped dirt on everybody in that documentary. If you weren't named Michael or Phil, you were screwed, and you were not going to get any love with that. Scotty and everybody, all his teammates. Whew. I don't know what Isaiah's doing, but brother, come here to Atlanta. Come sit with me. I know you do stuff for NBA TV and all that here in Atlanta, and I'll help break it all down for you because you're the only guy left in the world who doesn't know that Michael doesn't like you. And that's what's bugging Chuckery. All right, top of the hour, of course, it will be time for our Falcons flyover. It is all your Falcons news of the day that you need, including ESPN ranking where the Falcons were as far as their offseason and success. It's all next. It is the John Chuckery Show, live on a Thursday night, Sports Radio 92.9 The Game, and on the Radio.com app.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s. And each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.